Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can progressively modernize their customer journeys and model business operations around their customers. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by Backbase CEO and founder Jouk Pleiter and other senior banking leaders from around the globe. Ready to unpack how to re-architect banking together? Let's get started. Jouk, good to see you again. Welcome to yet another episode of Banking Reinvented. How are you today?
Yeah, good morning, Tim. Good to see you.
Likewise, we're fresh and ready for the next episode. And maybe to start off, we've got quite some exciting news from the Backbase side, perhaps to kick off with, Jouk. We're doing something extra in the AI realm.
Well, it's kind of it's built on top of what we've been doing in the last 2-3 years. But the first insights we had and we're working on and doubling down on is how important it is to have the right data before you can do anything meaningful with AI. I think one of the problems is that most of that super valuable data is in multiple siloed stovepipes inside the bank, but also at external sources. So the most fundamental insight where we want to double down on is kind of, okay, how do we kind of get the infrastructure with the Backbase Grand Central platform to make sure that we can get all the data like a data broker or basically a data pipeline or rails infrastructure from the core, from the payment rails, from the KYC, from fraud, from loyalty, from processors. Doesn't matter. But how do we kind of bring all that data, synchronize that data, and bring it together in a data lakehouse? So I think we're going to, what I'm proud of is that we're going to expand the Grand Central value proposition. It's not only the integration architecture, but it's also the data lakehouse and the data synchronization infrastructure under that label, under that brand. I really think that's going to be a powerful step moving forward. So that's on the enablement side. Then on top of that, you kind of clearly see all sorts of different recipes where AI can increase productivity. And that can be in helping customers to kind of grow their their future financial wellness. It can be on the fraud side. It can be on reducing the cost to service in the call center with conversational AI bots, et cetera. It can be helping the bank to drive cross and upsell to increase the share of wallet. So there's a whole plethora, I would say, of individual use cases that each have their own business case, right? So the nice thing is now that we're kind of helping and doubling down on the second layer, which is kind of basically the AI infrastructure and the domain modeling, where you go for smaller optimized models for each and each subdomain. So we just announced a new head of AI joining Backbase to really kind of double down on this and the current initiatives and basically triple, quadruple the effort, but also, again, very concentrated, not just everywhere, but very concentrated on these very specific use cases, which will become kind of seamlessly embedded in the Backbase platform and in the model banks and in the customer journeys. So I don't expect, you know, a dramatic, you know, AI capability, but I expect AI-driven acceleration and productivity across pretty much everywhere in the platform where it is relevant and where it can improve productivity.
Yeah, really exciting stuff.
It's good to be able and to be in a position that we can make those investments at a meaningful level. And I'm kind of looking forward. I think the rules of the game are going to be rewritten for any SaaS company and also for any financial services institution. So I think it's good to be close to the forefront of where you know, the action is happening.
Absolutely. And we're certainly going to discuss this more in the podcast as well as we go forward.
Yeah, I think you should hire, also kind of invite guys like Thomas, like Chris. We've got some very strong thinkers in this domain. So I think they would be very good guests for you down the road.
For sure. Then building on top of the episode of last week, where we spoke of the different modernization plays, we ended with the notion of composability, also because you mentioned it a few times, like if you are in a composable fabric, then you have the flexibility too. So today I really want to double down on what is composable banking, what is composability in general, where practically you see the whole industry talking about composability, also beyond banking, by the way. But maybe we can go first down to the basics of what does composability mean in the banking context?
Composability is probably my most favorite topic because it is at the heart, it is at the core of any modernization program. And why is that? Well, the difference is we have monoliths and you want to move away from monoliths. The way to do that is that you have to decompose it into smaller modular capabilities. And that is, I think, a composable architecture. So from a technical perspective, you've got a monolithic architecture and you've got a composable architecture. I think that's the most simple definition of what it is. Those are two extremes, right? So then if you double click on what is a composable architecture, what is that and why would that be relevant? Well, I first think it is modular, independent, autonomous capabilities instead of a monolith that can work together, right? So these capabilities can operate a certain task and they also are designed and architected holistically as a family. So they are designed to collaborate. Once you have that, on top of that, you now have the flexibility to make fit for purpose business applications or customer journeys. And I think that's in a nutshell what composable architecture is. You have to identify the modular generic capabilities that can collaborate together under one architecture, giving then at the second level people the freedom to make fit for purpose applications.
It's like a mix and match of capabilities, almost like building blocks or Legos that together combined can drive business value.
With Lego, you can kind of basically create, or let's take Meccano. Maybe some people remember that, right? But like whatever, but it's a good metaphor because it kind of shows you that these building blocks, you can make a car and you can make an airplane, right? Same building blocks. And I think that's kind of the notion of, so the ultimate end result is not predefined in the logic.
Clear. When did we end up in composability being a topic? Because we've been at this now for a decade. It's maybe also not that new of a concept, perhaps. Or how do you see this, Jouk?
I think the analyst relation, like the analyst like Gartner, there's a group of it's an architectural principle. So the original, the heritage or the origin of the concept is defined in the IT world and is not per se related to banking. It is a holistic architectural principle. And I think practitioners in that field, the Gartners, the lead architecting community around the world, have been discussing the pros and cons of different patterns. I think very specifically to banking is that composable architectures till today are relatively rare because, you know, in the last 50 years, everything has been developed as a monolith. So in banking, the question is not about like, do we like composability? We most likely do like the conceptual benefits. The question is more, how do we get there? And what will it take for us to kind of get in a more fit IT regime? Where we can, ultimately, it is about the business benefits again. It goes back to, can we reduce our cost? Because we have way too much monolithic logic that is basically duplication over duplication over duplication. So I think a composable architecture, if you would ask me like, yeah, what are the benefits of a composable architecture, right? I would say number one benefit is you have reusability. And I think that's the major problem. With monoliths, there is no reusability. There's only duplication, you know, to the max. Really, really extremely inefficient and very expensive because you need to run all these monoliths, you need to maintain them. It costs a fortune. So composable architecture is about reusability, write once and then repurpose it and evolve it, right? The second thing, it gives you agility because everything that is kind of, let's say, between brackets, hard-coded, as a monolith, that is not going to give you any agility, right? Or everything that is duct taped and system integrated together, that is ultimately, it's going to slow you down very, very severely. And you're basically spending $100 million as a bank CEO and CIO, and you don't know where the money goes. You certainly don't get extra business or customer value out of that $100 million at all. It is just to keep the lights on. So I think the second part is that ultimately you need to go there to get more agility. Yeah, okay, so that's good. Like you have efficiency, reuse, and you have agility. Everybody, of course, would like to have that. You know, it's a no-brainer. But then the question comes like, how do we get into this composable architecture operating model?
And that comes back to one of our previous episodes where we spoke about decomposing complexity and hollowing out the core. Where with this pattern, you actually have the flexibility to do this capability per capability. Which if you do it long enough, you will end up with a composable architecture.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly where companies like Backbase and other fintechs, I think what we've been doing and what you see the fintech community is doing, that we all kind of pick different elements of the classic banking IT environment, and we basically start to decompose capabilities. So some companies are completely specialized in KYC and fraud detection, and they are becoming best of breed in that set of capabilities, and they are exposing that via APIs. You see this in KYC, you see it in fraud, you see it in payment processing, you see it in customer data acquisition. So you start to see in the industry that all these different players are creating these autonomous capabilities. Same like Backbase, where we say we're not kind of creating per se all these individual capabilities, but we are creating the engagement orchestration platform, the security, the entitlements, the process orchestration, the omni-banking capabilities to kind of basically orchestrate a customer journey with the engagement banking platform. But also we can integrate into composable fintech capabilities that are available nowadays. And then you come together where you can actually curate these capabilities, and now you have the flexibility to compose them into fit-for-purpose customer journeys.
Building on top of that, that brings us to the notion of the engine room. So on the one hand, we have the concept of composability, which basically means you have these modular capabilities that you can mix and match to drive business value. But then the second question, which leads to, okay, so how are we going to do this? What are the different chunks of capability that you would need? Or which categories would you need to have in your engagement layer? We've been doing this now for a decade, right? So we have figured out which categories you would need to have, regardless of a vendor. In any case, you need to have those in place. I'm just going to name a few, Jouk, and then let's pick a few to discuss if that's helpful for the audience. There's a whole notion of having a centralized identity and entitlements capability, which on itself is a full layer. There's customer experience services. There's omnichannel banking services. There's the human assist you want to centralize. There's process orchestration, which practically sits below any process, both customer as well as employee facing. And then there's customer data and AI capabilities. Like in a nutshell, that's where we have arrived till now in this journey. Perhaps we can discuss a few of those, because I can also imagine that the audience feels there's maybe some overlap with existing architectures.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So what you're just describing there, Tim, are the usual suspects. And let's also think a little bit about what happened in the last 10, 15 years. In the layers you describe, like the identity and access management layer, or in the process orchestration layer, or in the data layer, right? Nothing new. But what is different? What is different is that in the last 10, 20 years, people had the choice to purchase horizontal layer technologies like an identity solution or a process PPMN solution from horizontal software vendors, which is totally fine. So what you basically have to do is kind of bring your own technology. You procure that from, let's say, 5 to 10 different vendors, and then the integrating party starts. Literally, you arrive at, you know, the first 100 million is just spent on integrating horizontal technologies. And, you know, that was the only choice at the time. So I think it totally makes sense. So perfect. If you wake up today, I think our first observation is like, we would love to interoperate and integrate with anything, right? So let's coexist and let's like utilize this stuff. But the problem remains that you have an insane amount of system integration that needs to be done at the foundational level. So therefore, I think the logic we saw was kind of dictating us, let's make sure that these different layers are pre-integrated under a common architectural pattern. So what will bring that to you kind of with a headless platform and with an engine room, the first major saving part is that it will save you that 100 million on system integration cost at the foundation level. I'm not even talking about business value here. I'm just making sure that the stuff works together. Right. So therefore, I think if you think about the layer, the identity and entitlements layer is crucial. Everything you do inside the bank with your customers, with your business partners, with your employees, everything has to run through that security filter. Who is who? How do we prevent fraud? How do we make sure that the right people have the right entitlements to do certain things by themselves on behalf of who's going to approve it? What's the 4I principle? So identity and especially access control, and it's just more than a little, let's say, let's log in, but it's kind of the step-up authentication. It is the approval cycles, all of those elements, and also towards employees that are crucial. So I really think identity, access management, entitlements, consent management is a first-class citizen of an engagement banking platform and of a composable architecture. And the second one is that you have the digital or omnichannel banking logic layer, and it is typically needed to complement the core. For instance, you would like to do a product summary where you will get products presented together from multiple cores. So pension products, investment products, savings products, loan products, credit card products, loyalty products, all unified in a single business logic capability that can help you to kind of manage those different products. But below the surface, in the platform level, they are in multiple legacy systems in the background. So that's what we call omni-channel logic, banking logic, to make sure that you are independent from the core and you can create a more customer-centric view, like, what are my products? Right? And very often, with all these siloed application, nobody can give that unified answer because that logic is not available. So there's plenty of examples where you would like to have omni-channel banking logic. If you do so, and if you have all of this, you can empower your end customers, but you also then would like to empower your employees so they can do stuff on behalf, the human assist. And that can be someone with a relationship manager, it can be a customer support employee. The end customer can be in the same room with the relationship manager. It can also be remote. How do you kind of orchestrate that people can work with the same business logic, the same data set, and can basically assist in any journey where needed, right? That is a no-brainer. Then process orchestration. Process orchestration is really the critical part because it is kind of taking care of a journey end-to-end. From the beginning, collecting the right information, the right inputs, going to the back-end system, retrieving the right information to start a dialogue, to this decisioning in the workflow. Can we go straight to processing and execute it without human intervention? Or in the case of a mortgage, do we kind of need to have the mortgage advisor involved? So process orchestration with workflows, case management, decisioning, document collection, and having an event-driven architecture that is providing the dynamic power to work with structured step-by-step processes, but also completely dynamic processes that can go in any direction, dynamic case management. That is a critical capability to orchestrate customer journeys. If you combine all these things and you drive these journeys, then there is the only thing what you're doing is that you're accumulating a lot of data by definition, because data is input and also data is output, right? So therefore, unifying that data, you finally arrive at the point where you now say, like, this platform, this composable architecture is basically routing all my data, because it is exactly at the crossroad where all the data is flowing anyhow, to my customers, to my employees. So why not also directly connect this to a data lakehouse where we can unify the data, where we can normalize the data, where we can bring it into a common domain model. So next to composable business logic and APIs, we now have common data sets with a common domain model, and people can utilize that that data again for purposeful customer journeys, depending on the use case. So, yeah, I hope it kind of makes sense, but we didn't make this up. We basically run into this by experience, and then you start to recognize these patterns. And that's why you kind of end up with the notion of an engagement layer and an integration layer and a system of record layer. And then in that engagement layer, what are the sub layers and kind of how do you come up with kind of the goal, the ultimate goal of composability, that you have reusable capabilities that are versatile enough to streamline 80, 90, 100% of the use cases you see in the field.
Adding on top of that, Jouk, why did we come up with this architecture after, you know, more than a decade of work? Because in and of itself, Backbase is essentially focused on removing that integration complexity and limiting that integration work that needs to happen on the layer anyhow. So as an example, the identity layer was not originally in the Backbase platform. It was always integrated because we figured out every bank already has this capability in their architecture. But then a few years down the line, I think the insight was driven by, this is a very high ticket, or let's say it's a very high cost to the initial implementation, where the value is actually rather, it's rather commoditized, and it's essential to have it in this layer properly, which then backed the investment to actually bring this into the composable platform fabric. And I would say for each and every of these layers, we've made that trade-off. And there's also parts that are still clearly out of it. That is always by design we integrate, for instance, core banking. But yeah, maybe to share also the perspective that we're not just dreaming up this layer because we want to own every piece of it. On the contrary, it's solving that integration challenge. That's the primary focus, with the objective to deliver fast and be composable.
Yeah, no, you are so right. And also thank you for putting this front end center. It's not like we love to kind of get all this stuff together. It basically, the market was forcing us because what you see is you see friction, and the friction is last mile integration. And it's not only that one-off integration, bespoke system integration, which you can easily duplicate and amplify, but also to maintain that and having a clean upgradability path. I think that's kind of holistically where you look like the more system integration you have, the more custom system integration you need to do, the higher your maintenance burden. Plain vanilla, that's kind of it. And over time, that is called technical debt, and it will accumulate and it will accumulate as every bank, every software company will have that. So we saw that, and we basically saw the initial integration, system integration effort is way too high. So what can we reduce to reduce that system integration ticket and get faster time to value, faster time to market? That's the only driver, reduce implementation effort, right? And you, so therefore you industrialize. The second benefit is that you can now also, as a bank, outsource that system integration maintenance work to a commercial platform, because inside the back-based product organization, we now have 800 people. They basically are doing that work to a degree, right? All that maintenance work, that compatibility work, making sure that everything works together, that is a burden. And you can now offload that burden, just like you can offload the burden of DevOps and cloud deployment. You know, the cloud providers will do that for you. The same thing, you can offload, let's say, to a large degree, fraud detection, because a specialist company can do this. Here you basically can say, we can go. You basically have two choices. I can go and continue on the system integration path, or I can basically kind of procure that and outsource that to a degree where the provider will take care of that burden. So I can reallocate my IT investments in creating business value.
Yeah, that would be my follow-on question. So let's imagine you take away that burden, you do leverage a white label platform like Backbase. What does it then unlock? And there's a combined answer there. One of the unlocks is you actually get instantaneous value, because listening to the modernization plays in the previous episode, there's capabilities and journeys already that you can apply, which are just, you don't innovate there. But the second part is that you can actually focus on real innovation, really driving value proposition elements to differentiate your offerings versus building, practically a commoditized platform fabric that's already out there.
I think the best value, I think ultimately businesses need to adjust. There are competitive threats, there are opportunities, there's customer demand. So, and I think what we've been discussing is that for the last 50 years, there's always a talk about customer centricity, agility, velocity, being adaptive, right? So, and conceptually, that is very true. The simple question is, what is holding us back from being agile or being truly customer centric and not just lip service or, right? And I think ultimately, we are very all together collectively in industry, a little bit frustrated by the fact we can have these visions, but then the IT reality and is kind of holding us back. And we've been in this dilemma. It's almost like a prisoner's dilemma. We've been in this dilemma for a very long time now. And therefore, I think we need to find a way to kind of get out of this, right? And with all the benefits associated to it. Back to composable architecture, it's a platform, it's a play that you can go and break yourself away from monoliths, and you can break yourself. There's two diseases, monoliths and duct taped system integration. I think there's been done trillions and trillions of dollars and lines of codes correlating to bespoke logic of integrating stuff that nobody understands why we did it in the first place. Nobody knows how to maintain it. I've seen too many examples of that, right? That will never scale. That also will never become customer friendly. And we're all very frustrated about it. So, and therefore, I think we need to take the bull by the horns to say, okay, cool. Let the legacy IT infrastructure stay on the side. It is what it is. Like, nobody's going to change that. Let's go for a greenfield technology platform. I'm not talking about a greenfield bank, but I'm talking about a greenfield cloud-based composable platform on the side. And then let's decide for every new or improvement cycle we want to do. Now we have a choice. Either we're going to invest that money in the legacy environment with all the pros and cons, or we're going to reimagine this on a cloud-based composable banking platform, which provides all the plumbing, all the capabilities are there. You can cook any meal, fit for purpose. So I think that is the trade-off. Make that investment in the old world or make the investment in the new world. And the more you can make it in the new world, you are moving to a more healthier, leaner, more agile operating model.
Maybe a different type of question before we go to the key takeaways. You've been building Backbase for almost 20 years, Jouk. I imagine you've been through multiple architectural redesigns, perhaps. What's your personal biggest lesson in this complete journey when it relates to the architecture?
Yeah, I think architecture and software code follows the organizational structure. We've seen it in Backbase. All the rework we had to do, and we had to do a lot of rework in Backbase. It is very often organized by the organizational structure, the team structure. And clearly, you also see that in the bank where things are organized about products or organized around channels. You get a channel architecture, you get channel budgets, you see people defending that, etc. So that's, I think, is the most important thing. And there's never a perfect answer, not in the bank, not in Backbase, but how do you kind of evolve your organizational structure that you kind of create an operating model that is closer to your North Star, while still people have the right level of autonomy to create business value. And that's why I like the decoupling of the core. So let's decouple from these legacy systems, loosely coupled and coexist. Let's integrate loosely coupled with fintech. So we've got a whole bunch of new composable capabilities we can utilize. And then in that engagement layer, there's also a very important distinction between who can provide the, let's say, foundational logic that you would normally have to do without any business value. So I really call that the engagement banking logic, the orchestration logic. You can now white label that and you can license that. And then on top of that, you can really start to focus with the right organization model on creating that business and that customer value. So that is a paradigm and a shift. It's the first shift is how do we move away from spending good money on legacy and kind of reallocating that in a more future-proof architecture. And then within that initiative, are you going to build everything from scratch, or are there platforms that can help you jumpstart? And I think nowadays, technology platforms, fintechs, can absolutely help with that acceleration. So it's almost like the evolution where you basically can now operate and make impact as a bank on a higher abstraction level and basically focus on the things that really matter most, and that is business value and customer value.
Well said. Then we move to the key takeaways for this week. First of all, we spoke about composable banking. What does it really mean? Composability is about building reusable capabilities like Lego blocks or Meccano, I think you mentioned.
Meccano, Lego,
which essentially delivers efficiency, reusability, write once, and maintain and evolve. So over time, you end up with a whole composable architecture that has a wide variety of capabilities that you can consistently reuse and leverage to build business value. The second point was mostly about why would you go for this? It delivers the business agility you are looking for, that you might even be desperate for to a degree. Because the moment you are in a composable fabric and you are really able to execute in that new paradigm, you are going to be way more agile in terms of delivery, which could be a weekly cycle, could be a daily cycle even, which we do see happening in the industry today. Then the second part was talking about the engine room. And the engine room is effectively, what does your architecture ideally look like if you go all the way, right? And we shared the Backbase blueprint. You can have your own blueprint, but this is where we ended up so far. And the why behind building the type of engine room view is to move away from all the different point solutions that you have to bring that holistic view, meaning we brought together layers like identity and entitlements, process orchestration, omnichannel banking, the human assist capabilities, and many others, because you simply need to have them completely integrated. The moment you do not have those fully integrated, at least is the view that we built this company on, you're going to have a lot of system integration work, which is effectively not delivering value. And it's going to keep your people busy, hundreds of them, if not thousands. One interesting take there, Jouk, you said, if you go for the old model, the integration party gets started.
Yeah, totally.
That resonated with me because it's definitely going to take you quite a while to do it.
Hey, and let's be very clear, there's always system integration. So I'm not debating that at all. I think but there's a necessary system integration and there's useful system integration. And of course, we would like to go for the latter.
Indeed. And concluding on the engine room let's say, concept, it is all about reducing implementation effort, right? At the end of the day, that's why you go for this fabric, to go for speed, agility, efficiency, and effectively deliver value to your customers way faster. So that's the take that I have from this conversation. And Jouk, anything to add?
So I think in my mind, the key word here is that ultimately you have either bespoke software development and bespoke system integration, which is all good and we can rationalize that. But ultimately, whatever we do bespoke, that results in technical debt, which you need to maintain. And very often that is not happening. Hence, these systems become monoliths, they become slow, and you basically start losing the velocity. So I think that's the root cause problem. So how do we prevent, if we're going to write a new chapter together, how do we prevent this? And I think the best way to do that is to basically minimize the amount of lines of code you own as a bank, where you can now smartly outsource this to specialists in separate, different composable capabilities. So these different vendors now, with their industrialized solutions, will take care of the maintenance burden, the upgrade burden, stay current, innovate on top of it. So I think it's a smarter collaboration model where you don't have to take that full burden in your next cycle. You can basically outsource and offload that. So it's a separation of concern. It's basically it's the most fundamental economic principle where you do separation of concerns, task division, and then you collaborate, and then ultimately you get a much more efficient output. I think it's as old as the world. And you kind of now see that happening at this level. I think the biggest obstacle, and I would like to highlight that, is that traditional bankers, especially on the business side, are not per se technology savvy. The ones that are rare. So we now really see a very nice concept. We call it Decoded, and it's basically a one-day workshop to invite executives, non-technology executives, actually to play with an API, to get their own sandbox, just to see, hey, if I ask this composable capability, just to kind of educate people, like, it's not a tech play. It's not something you outsource to your IT department, but just literally at the boardroom level, just have the fun and also the excitement, like, hey, cool, I can make my own capability. I can compose this stuff. If I can do it, then we can do this at scale. So I think also kind of breaking down that barrier where traditional bankers are maybe not kind of the most technology savvy people, which is totally fine. But I would, if they are listening here to the podcast, and in my one-on-one conversations, I always invite people, go for these Decoded workshops, because that's where you kind of basically are in the lab. You get a feel for it, and it kind of will give you also, it will make you a stronger leader, and it will give you a personal direct feeling about how these things work. And you can utilize that in your conversation and in your own level of comfort in how you steer your bank into the future.
Awesome. So getting hands-on experience to actually drive the change.
Otherwise, like, it's always technology Jimbo or it's something you outsource. Like, get the real feeling, I would say. Then it comes to life.
Awesome. Jouk, thanks for joining me today at this podcast. See you next week.
Thank you, Tim. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow both Jouk and myself on LinkedIn, where we will be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.